Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We get together here once a week to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes, we've got some friends. The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by Practical Farmers of Iowa, a member-based, farmer-led, nonprofit organization that has been strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigations and information sharing since 1985. You can find out more at their website, www.practicalfarmers.org.
Welcome to our kitchen table today. We'll just sit around and talk about some really fine things. It is the middle of summer. Well, it
summertime,
feels like the
summertime,
middle of
that. Summertime.
And we
summertime.
Found out that song. Everybody sort of knows that little summertime song.
Yeah, it was in like high school or something
right,
oldies.
And nobody in the world could figure out who sang
it. We looked it up. What did we say it was? The Jameses or something?
The Jamies?
The Jamies, maybe? I don't know. They must have been a one-hit wonder. I don't really know, but I remember that song.
See, it is stuck in our brains, a rather important musical achievement for this fine country.
Our brains.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes, it is. All right. We have some 4th of July thoughts.
Yes, this is our 4th of July show. Oh, tomorrow is the 4th of July. Now, and remember, in Ames, and I don't know why, but the fireworks are tonight, not tomorrow night.
Well, actually, that's good because I think there's a chance of rain tomorrow night.
Really?
A slight chance
more
of rain.
More rain? Oh, my.
A slight
my.
Chance
oh
of
my.
Rain.
Okay.
But fireworks, they go. Now, I'm not much on the rockets, red glare, big noise fireworks.
Oh, I like fireworks.
See?
Yeah,
some people.
I don't know. Maybe it's the drama. And I like to be really as close as I can get it underneath so it, like, spreads out over me. Something from my childhood, probably, Another thing stuck in my brain.
It's probably because my mom was one of those moms that was just sure that if we sat into the fireworks, that our hair would catch on fire. So we had to, like,
well, there is
stay
that.
Away. You know,
yeah.
and she was a very cautious and loving mother. So I have, anyway, the noise of the fireworks sort of bothers me, but I do like, they are pretty. They are very pretty. So fireworks.
Yeah, well, here's what I liked. The thing is, you know, we have so many loud, newfangled, da-da-da-da-da, but fireworks are ancient.
That's right.
They have been going on forever. The Chinese started them how many hundreds of years ago?
So they
are a very old-fashioned, old-timey thing.
Yeah, it does speak to the pyromania in all of us. I rather like that. So have a good evening at the fireworks. Yes, yes. I have another 4th of July thought. I have a poem to share with you. This poem is a little bit about patriotism, and I thought this time of year, patriotism. And the author,
I'm looking at our script. It's Lawrence Ferlinghetti's take on patriotism. Oh, boy, here we go.
All right. Lawrence Ferlinghetti, poet.
He was a beat poet
a
from
beat
San Francisco.
Poet, at the same time that Allen Ginsberg was going on. And he was
even older than Lana and I.
Oh, yes. Co-founder of City Lights Books, bookseller and publishers. Actually, he was one of the publishers of Allen Ginsberg. Poetry, theater, art criticism, and he did a lot of stuff. And like Donna said, a beat poet. Perhaps the best form of flattery is some good criticism. And I think thinking about patriotism this time of year is about right. Here is Lawrence Ferlinghetti's poem called Pity the Nation. Pity the nation whose people are sheep and whose shepherds mislead them. Pity the nation whose leaders are liars, whose sages are silenced, and whose bigots haunt the airwaves. Pity the nation that raises not its voice except to praise conquerors and acclaim the bully as hero, and aims to rule the world by force and by torture. Pity the nation that knows no other language but its own and no other culture but its own. Pity the nation whose breath is money and sleeps the sleep of the too well-fed. Pity the nation. Oh, pity the people who allow their rights to erode and their freedoms to be washed away. My country, tears of thee, sweet land of liberty.
All right. Now, we have to remember this was probably written in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess these issues are eternally with us. This is the work of a democracy. You know, the poets and the politicians, we got a lot of work to do.
We do.
Always.
Democracy is an ongoing project.
It's a process, not a product, right?
Right. We have to speak out. We have to stand up.
Right. Maybe we have to think. We have to educate ourselves.
Right.
We got to have an informed citizenry.
Right. So I thought that was something to think about.
It's very patriotic.
Among the fireworks.
Very patriotic.
Remember.
In the deepest sense, in the ethical sense, that's where patriotism, there's some work to do there.
Yes,
for
remember.
For each of us.
This is America. We're all in this together. So summer is here. Donna, you have a sweet corn report.
Oh, da-da-da-da! The Grimes sweet corn has arrived at the truck that sits at 13th and North Grand. Mm-hmm. I had some yesterday. It's the peaches and cream variety. I did inquire. It is not genetically modified. Ta-da! It is not organic, however, but there's not much organic corn around here.
It's
but
tricky.
At least it's not genetically modified. And I had it for dinner last night, and it was so good. I did not even put butter and salt on it. Of course, I will eventually. But you know how the first of the season always tastes the best, you know, because it's a memory thing. It's like, oh, boy, here we are at last. Although I must say, because the tomatoes will come soon. And I always find that the first tomatoes on the vine are actually the tastiest, not just because I'm thrilled to have them, but I think there's something about the vigor of the plant when it first begins to fruit. Now, this is maybe not so true of corn, but it certainly is true of tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
But get your corn for the 4th of July. Oh, hallelujah.
Oh, yes. Sweet corn. Oh, summer. I will eat lots. I'm looking forward to eating lots.
Yes, I was prepared to eat the whole half dozen myself.
Oh, you did you?
Actually, I only ate half of the half, so I have three more for tonight.
There you go. And when we think of sweet corn in summer, there's all kinds of picnics and potlucks, but mainly picnics. And 4th of July is a time for picnics. Do you have some thoughts on picnics, Donna?
Well, you know, I love to go to the classics and just kind of tweak them a little and rethink them a little. And, you know, this time of year, I'm inclined towards, you know, of course, not cooking too much, but I'm big on sandwiches. And, of course, there's the potato salad. Now, I made a potato salad last week.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, potato salad is a wonderful thing. You can either use the vinegar and oil kind of base, like it's called the German potato salad with vinegar.
The what?
German.
Oh, the German.
The German potato salad has a vinegar base to it. Or the one that I made, I actually took a mixture of, now let's see, what did I do? Sour cream and mayonnaise.
That's a good combination.
Yeah, mayonnaise is a whole nother direction, but I kind of lightened it up with the sour cream. It was delicious. Now, here's the other thing I did in it. I used not just one kind of potato. I used four kinds of potatoes. So I had a purple potato, a yam, a sweet potato, and a little white potato.
That's nice.
And the sweet potatoes and the yams, I think it's really good. It takes it in a whole different direction.
Oh, good. Do you leave the skins on when you?
Not on the yams and the sweet potatoes.
Okay.
I actually peeled them and cubed them and kind of tossed them with a little olive oil, salt, and pepper and roasted them.
Ah, very good.
Roasting really concentrates the flavor. Of course, you could just cube them up and steam them mm-hmm. as well, either way.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many options. You can do anything you want
right.
with potato salad.
Right. You can either leave it so the potatoes are kind of, well, you know.
Discreet.
Firm.
Yeah.
But
right. Not too firm.
Or no, but you know, so they are chunks. You eat them with a fork,
right?
Or for the longest time, I had the hardest time pulling the potatoes off of the steamer in time, and they just kind of turn to mashed potatoes. Of course, that depends on the kind of potato
you're saying. Well, that would be called creamy, sweet, potato
salad. See, there's a variety. Just give it a name.
I try not to go that far, but, you know, it happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Because especially if you're doing any kind of volume, it's a little bit hard to control, which is one of the reasons I like roasting. It does they don't get mushy so much like that.
Good idea. Yeah. Good idea. Yeah.
And then there's all the questions of, you know, I think this time I took large chunks of some sweet onions and I lightly sauteed them, not dead.
Uh-huh.
Or you can use like raw onions, like scallions are really nice. Lots of herbs. I put in, lovage and parsley and basil. All the things that one might have in the garden right now. Mm-hmm. Tarragon is also another good option for potato salad. It does swing it a whole different way. This one I used celery because I wanted a little crunch.
Yeah, crunch.
I shredded carrots just for a little color more with the sweet potatoes. I mean, you know, what do you like in your... Some people they only like the kind their family made.
I know how it is. It's a real... And especially going out for a picnic, your mind goes back to what mom made.
So what do you like to do?
For my family, I remember the hot potato salads, but that tended to be more in a... That was more like for the church basement kind of buffet. Out in the... When you go to a picnic. One thing I like to add as a flavoring to potato salad is pickle juice.
Oh yeah, or a pickle relish. Something I grew up with using in their potato salad.
Yeah, and you always have. Well, since I make pickles, so you always have this too good to throw
away
stuff.
Plenty of juice, right?
And you're not going to drink all this juice, but. Potato salad is a good use for that. That kind of takes that's your dressing, although you probably want to add a little oil or mayonnaise.
I also put garlic scapes in it last week.
Good idea.
Because they were so tender and so perfect. Mm-hmm. Just finely chopped raw was really nice.
Mm-hmm. To kind of reiterate, the garlic scapes, because people still look at my pile of garlic scapes at the farmer's market.
Oh, what are those cute little things?
Yeah. And what is that, they say. And I say, those are garlic scapes, I say. And they say, what is that? Garlic scapes.
Like the garlic is escaping.
It's escape. It's the flower top, the flower shoot off the top of a garlic plant.
And they do, you can't see Lana's hands making a little curlicue in the air, but they do... I don't know. They're 6 to 8 inches long, and they make a little loop with a little point at the end.
Yes, there's lots of different kinds of garlic, but most of the garlic that I've seen, it starts out just straight, and then it bends around, and then it turns around, makes a complete corkscrew, and then shoots up again. Now, you want to grab those garlic shapes, break them off, because...
She's talking as a garlic farmer now.
Okay. Even if you're just growing, half a dozen heads in your garden, get out there and break off those garlic scapes. Use them in your kitchen because the garlic scapes, if they are allowed to flower, which they will, will poof open, they take the energy away from the plant, and you want all the energy to go into the bulb. Back into the bulb. Break that off, because this is the time of year that the garlic scapes need to be harvested so that in a few weeks, it depends on what your timing is, but for us, in a few weeks, we will be pulling up our garlic, and we hope that, now, in a big garden patch of garlic, it's a real trick to get all the garlic scapes because there's always one or two that kind of you don't see that they're wrapped around. But you hope
you get
all of them.
What do you do, just run around with the scissors and clip them off?
No, I just break them off with my hand.
Oh.
I can snip them with my thumb. Yeah,
She's a real thumb snipper, Lana.
I am. Okay. Walking up and down, it may be hotter than the Dickens out there, but you feel like you're doing something if you are harvesting garlic scapes.
Now, this year, and I don't remember from year to year, I always cut the little flower bud off. It seems to be not the right texture to chomp down.
No, unless you get them very, very, very young, the flower bulb turns into this bushy flower bulb. Think of the chive blossoms. I mean, it's the same family, the allium family.
Are they kind of pretty if you actually let them breathe?
They poof out and they do this great thing. But so lovely for the eye, but not so good for forming bulbs underneath. Or like Donna says, they're a little tough to eat. But that lovely stem is good to grab early. And
yeah, it needs to be picked early because if you wait too long, they do get tough.
Yeah. So, potato salads. Oh, yes. I like potato salads. Even, you know, sometimes even in a store deli or something, you just kind of get a hankering as a side. It's a good
potato salad and coleslaw.
Yeah.
By the way, I saw beautiful cabbages at the farmer's market last week.
Oh, already?
Yes.
Very good.
Really, really nice ones. So it's also coleslaw season. Here we go.
Ah, slaw and coal. Coal refers to the family of plants, the coal, brassicas.
Oh, does it? No, you mean it's not Nat King Cole or something like that?
Well, he probably liked coleslaw, too. But coal refers to cabbages, broccoli, cabbages, kale, all that stuff.
What a fount of information.
Why
you
do
are.
I know that? I have this stuff kind of stuck in my head. I don't know.
Now, the other thing we mentioned for summer, sandwiches.
Oh, good.
So, you know, one thing that we need to – here's – sandwiches are so infinitely creative, and it's so easy, and it's customizable for a family of so-and-so doesn't like mayonnaise, and so-and-so wants mustard, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But the nice thing, if you think ahead a little bit, is to consider the bread that you're going to put in the sandwiches.
Very good.
For example, at Wheatsfield, Nate the baker does these wonderful little – buns, they're almost like maybe it's his ciabatta dough. I don't really know, but I love those buns for sandwiches. Yeah, they're slightly chewy, but not too chewy, and they're fairly big around. I don't know, what do you think, 4 inches maybe or something? And they make beautiful sandwiches, and they're just crusty enough that if you want to make the sandwiches and then pack them for a picnic. In those little individual brown wax paper bags. It's just darling. they hold up really, really well. You can slather them with mayonnaise and mustard. Like I made a ham and cheese sandwich. So I took those buns, mustard, mayo, the ham, the cheese, and then I put on some mustard greens from your garden, Lana.
Yes, I have a little something to say about sandwiches. You can put a lot of other things besides just lettuce on your sandwich.
Absolutely.
It's a good opportunity. The bread, the cheese, all that other stuff, tomatoes coming in. You can even
basil,
put garlic,
arugula.
Steak. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Onions. Oh, any, you know, just.
And there are good kinds of greens to put on.
Yeah, you get your vegetable in there.
That's true. You can get a zing from different kinds of mustard. There's red mustards and green mustards and frilly and flat.
Oh, she doesn't mean prepared mustard.
No,
she
means
mustard greens.
Mustard greens.
Yes.
And yes, they do have a mustardy taste. Another thing you can, if you want a lemony taste, you can put on some sorrel leaves. That's good.
Mm-hmm,
that's
mm-hmm,
good. And basil leaves.
Lemon basil leaves.
Huh?
Yep.
I've got a little bit of radicchio kind of going the way of all flesh in my garden, but the leaves are still there. Radicchio is not a bad little addition to a sandwich, too. So
get creative with those sandwiches.
Yeah, and I'm not much for cooking out. We had a grilling show. We had some people come in who know about grilling. I like if I'm going to do a picnic. I just want to kind of relax. And
it's funny that you say that. I went through such a period of so much grilling that I actually don't keep a grill anymore.
Yeah.
I think when they decided that all that black and charcoal stuff was carcinogenic, I went, oh, okay. And so I just don't have a grill anymore. I mean, I really enjoy it when someone else does
it. Yeah, I do too.
But I don't do it as a habit myself.
So enjoy your picnics and take along a nice tablecloth. Or something to put down.
Yeah. You know what I have that I really like? I have an old-fashioned blue and white printed oilcloth tablecloth.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
That I really, really love, and it keeps going year after year after year.
Very good.
Yep.
A little word about things that want to join our picnic. What about mosquitoes, Donna?
Oh, we have a good year for mosquitoes, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you got a screened-in porch, you're in business, I can say that. You know, people used to have more screened-in porches than they do these days because everybody just sits in the air conditioning. But, well, there are certain hours of the day when there's less mosquitoes, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Although right now they just seem to be any hour I go out of the house, there's those darn mosquitoes, you know. I have different things that I, you know, slather on, like that, what's that called, Avon Skin So Soft. It actually kind of works. Nothing works perfectly. I have some other, I actually looked on the environmental working groups. You know, they have a whole listing of good cosmetics, bad shampoos, whatever, and they rate them. But what they said about mosquitoes we're very fortunate here in Iowa that we don't have a lot of, or maybe no, mosquito-borne illnesses at this point. Mm-hmm. So if we get a bite, it's not lethal. There's no Zika. There's no malaria. There's, you know, even we're not in the big pile of difficult things with ticks, although I'm sure it's coming. But even the environmental working group said, you know what? Since some of these things can be quite serious, don't mess around. So while we can be a little more relaxed here in Iowa, you know, and get out the citronella and the this and the that, which I do, they did say that DEET, which has a nasty reputation, they did say on the Environmental Working Group site that it is not the worst chemical on the planet. And if it's a matter of, you know, especially for somebody who might be worrying about Zika or going somewhere where those things are issues, use it.
Yeah, well,
you know, now you must have some good tricks for going out there because you're out in the garden.
Yes, I find that a commercial bug repellent with DEET is good. So I have a hat that I always wear, and spraying the hat helps me a lot. I'm not super alert. Mosquitoes like my husband a lot more than me, so that's good.
Oh, lucky you.
but there are times. So this time of year, I have a big, baggy, long-sleeved white shirt, wear long pants if it's really bad, or just spray my legs and wear the shirt, and spray my hands. Nothing is worse than having biting your hands.
Yeah, because you're not going to wear gloves
right.
in this weather.
And
so you spray your hat.
Spray my hat.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. It's a big
trick.
Kind of floppy
uh-huh,
hat. Yeah,
uh-huh.
That's good. So at least that is always, and it's an easy thing to put on all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but things get really intense. Both my husband and I have mosquito nets that fit over the top of the hat and go down and tuck into our shirts. So
where does one acquire such a thing?
At a outdoor supply. People that go camping, tents.
What's the one we have here?
Jacks, you know,
With
the fly fishing things and things like that. You can get mosquito, and they're nicely made to fit on a hat. I suppose beekeepers would do that, too, but you wouldn't be able to see all the way around. Those things have been, some years, they are real lifesavers, I tell you.
Well, this might be one of those years.
You do have to go out there and work in the garden. Yes, you do. Oh, boy, oh,
now,
boy.
I did read something really fun last week, though. Possums, which I have one that goes through my yard probably nightly. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But possums are big tick eaters.
Oh, bless their little hearts.
They just hoover them right up. So bless those possums.
Huh? And bats. Yes. Bats. Thanks to all the
bats and the birds.
Bats and the birds and the possums.
Yeah, while I'm busy hating on all of those mosquitoes, I try to remember that it's really good food for birds.
Very good. There you go. All right. This is KHOY. And this is the Donalana Kitchen. We are Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. to me. All right, welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We're talking about summer. We're talking about the 4th of July picnics. And I would be remiss if I did not talk a little bit about rain that this area has been showered with recently. Last weekend, it just rained buckets.
Yeah, we have been, although here in Ames, we didn't get the brunt of it this time. But there are these things, like, where is it, Ankeny? Would they have, like, 5 inches in 2 hours or something really, really spectacular.
So the rivers are high, and it's wet, and that also places for mosquitoes. During that Saturday evening rain this past weekend, I was celebrating with some friends. A farm called Mustard Seed Farm was celebrating its 10th birthday.
It is a Catholic workers' farm.
Yes. And so they give a lot of their stuff away. They help people that need food. They have lots of interns. They have a lot of wonderful outreach. They do great vegetables. They do great food. And they've been around for 10 years. And we were celebrating. We were celebrating in a very nice, dry building. The rain was pouring on the roof. It was a bit noisy. But after we finished our wonderful meal, because people connected with the farm know how to cook.
Potluck.
Well, the rain stopped, and a rainbow came out for 45 minutes. And woo-hoo! we put two fiddles and a banjo in the middle of the room, and we called some dances, and we had, for 45 minutes, we had a good, dry bit of fun.
Yeah, that rainbow was a sign of blessings, I guess.
It was. Then it started raining again, of course. But that birthday party brings us to zucchini, because I baked a chocolate zucchini cake for that event. Zucchini goes with anything, and it is coming. It's back. Yes, it is. Zucchini has been responding to the warm weather and the rain. I've got some really great plants, and they're kind of just starting at my place so that I can actually get out there and pick them in a timely fashion.
Yes. The little zucchinis are delightful. The big ones are, oh boy, oh boy.
Well, the big ones are chicken food, you know?
Oh.
Never let anything go to waste. The chocolate zucchini cake, I found a recipe online on the website Epicurious, and the recipe was from Bon Appetit magazine.
A reputable source.
And it was very good. Just kind of, you know, it was good. And I sprinkled the top with walnuts. And I had some leftover cocoa nibs that you got from you. Some cocoa nibs. And I put those over the top, which made everything.
Oh, crunchy.
More crunchy, more chocolatey. And what could be bad with that? So, chocolate zucchini cake and a good barn dance. Happy birthday, Mustard Seed Farm. I think summer squash is all good. Some people don't like summer squash.
I tend to be dismissive of it, and I'm wrong, okay? I am. It's not my favorite vegetable, probably because I've seen too many of those big honkers, right? It has such a delicate flavor that it's almost used for just like filler, for nothing, you know? And it's very easy to lose the flavor of it. I had to say my good friend Bashak did this wonderful thing with the zucchini where she took the not too large ones and she sliced them on a mandolin, which is it's not the musical mandolin. It's the culinary one, which is a little contraption that they use them a lot in restaurants. When you see all these really thinly sliced vegetables, it's because they put them on this little thing and slid it over a blade.
A very sharp blade.
Yes. It's kind of either you have the habit or you don't. But Bashak just whipped it out, and we were at Paula and Gio's house, and they're all big vegetable cookers. And so what she did was she had a bunch of them sliced very thinly. Then she tossed them in a little olive oil, salt, and pepper. And Gio threw them on the grill, but he barely cooked them. Just enough to make them really pliable.
So they didn't fall through.
No. You could easily overcook it. But this is the thing about zucchini. It is extremely delicate in every sense of the word. You know, the flavor is delicate, but boy, they got it just right. It was very finely sliced and then very lightly seasoned, then very lightly grilled. And it was just like kind of, it didn't go to mush, but it was just pliable. And then I think Bichat probably squeezed a little bit of lemon juice on it. And I have to say, that alone, that presentation, made me instantly shut up about zucchini and revise my opinions, you know.
See? Old dogs can learn new tricks.
Oh, that's right. They were really, really good. So handle those zucchini very gently.
Yes, I agree with you. Probably the worst thing about zucchini is their tendency to go soggy because, of course, they are made up of a whole lot of water.
Yeah. They are. You just have to be careful with them.
Right. I pan fry them, slice them into little rounds or half round, and pan fry them, and you put them in with some onions or whatever, and they just start cooking, and you go, oh no, because they just, all this moisture comes out.
You should throw the onions in first let them, because the onions actually take longer. Mm-hmm. I think why we're all tired of zucchini is because they are usually overcooked, and then they're nothing but sog.
Right, but you, as far as I'm concerned, you can leave them in this very big pan and cook them rather rapidly. Eventually, the moisture does go away. And you turn them over, and the bottom of the zucchini and the onions and whatever you put in there is a little bit crispy-wispy. And then you turn that over and let it get crispy again. And by the time that gets a little browned, most of the water has gone away. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really good. So I've been, and here it is, this base for stuff. So I've put on the stovetop, I've been experimenting with different things. The first night I had zucchini, I got some sun gold tomato soup left over from last year out of the refrigerator, out of the freezer.
Lana. Sun gold tomato soup left from last year. Okay.
So that was kind of my main.
Everybody has this in their freezer,
the soup,
right?
Yeah, right. Of course. And I was going to have that soup. So, but with that, I did zucchini and put scapes and tarragon and cheese on. Okay, that was that taste. Mm-hmm. The next night, I used bacon and greens in with the. Yeah, whole different thing. The next night, and I maybe I'm a little obsessive here, but I've been trying different zucchinis, and the last night I did a lemony zucchini, and added some bow tie pasta, and I got the lemony taste by adding lemon verbena, sorrel, and lemon basil.
Ah, lemon basil. Yay.
See, that's a good use for that. Mm-hmm. There it was. Mm-hmm. And I remember, cook them until the water evaporates. It's just good. I like it. Don't be afraid of zucchini. I've brought in a couple different kinds. There's green zucchini and there's zucchini and there's summer squash. Mainly it is a marketing ploy. Mm-hmm. The varieties that have been developed in Italy tend to be called zucchini, okay? And the ones that are kind of all over, mainly yellow ones, tend to be called summer squash. Same family, same thing. Some have smaller seeds. Mm-hmm. Some are a little earlier to ripen. There are plain green ones. I grew one called a gray zucchini, which is speckledy and lighter green.
Now, is it my imagination, or does that gray one have a little deeper flavor?
I like it better. I think it's better flavor. You just kind of go around till you find one that you like. The green one is a variety is Black Beauty. Okay, and called that a lot. And there was a new variety this year called Tempest from Johnny's Seed Catalog, and it's a summer squash. You can't see very much on this one, but it does have a little bit of striping to it. And then there's one called Zephyr, which has, it's a yellow, I think it's a yellow zucchini. It's not as lumpy as the summer squash.
I think that kind has smaller seeds than like the summer squash.
Summer squash,
ones. Like the summer squash ones, the yellow ones are, I will say, are my least favorite because they have the largest. Yep. Seeds, which are not texturally particularly pleasant, and often they have the least amount of flavor.
Right.
So I don't tend to buy them except for one thing.
What?
They make a nice color accent.
They do. They do.
In amongst all of the green. So
Something to add to your potato salad. Yeah. There you go.
Now, also, if you're if you're looking online and you wander into either French or English cookbooks, they will be called courgette.
Oh, yes. That threw me for a loop for quite.
Yeah, so that just means zucchini. Okay.
Okay. Zucchini.
Courgette.
Sommerjouette or courgette.
There you go.
It's good to know these things. We can make do. We can make do. Yes. And actually, coming soon in my garden are the patty pans. Patty pan squash. The little flying saucer kind.
Yeah, those are a cute shape. They do add visual interest, I must say. Mm-hmm. And try to keep them small.
Yeah.
Especially if you want them for the shape. Mm-hmm. When they're small, they're much cuter.
Oh, yes. Yeah. They come in yellow and green, and they are scalloped. They're like little buttons, and they grow from little buttons to
big buttons.
Plates.
Yeah,
so be
right.
careful. Be careful.
Right.
And I find those being a little firmer.
They do. Yeah. They don't sog out quite so much. Okay, I have to ask you, the queen of tomatoes, what's the tomato report? When are we going to start to see the real live beginning of the tomato season for this summer?
Oh, I'm sure lots of folks are already harvesting their tomatoes because you can grow them many, many different ways. Our farm had dry spring, and then we had the deluge. So
we are still having.
Oh, I think it's going to be about 3 weeks.
3 weeks more. All right.
Yeah, our garlic is late, and later. What do we know? I mean, I've only been farming, it doesn't sounds like a lot, but 20 years. What is 20 years to a planet, you know?
A lot of variation.
Right? A lot of variation happens. So I think it's a little later than usual. And I'm saying 3 weeks for things. I did find my first tomato hornworm, so things are progressing normally.
Oh, boy.
Things look very good and lots of buds, lots of small green tomatoes, but it's going to be a while. We need some.
Well, and at the farmer's market, there have been some high tunnel tomatoes already.
Yes.
Lee's Greens had very good tomatoes, I must say, for not being grown. Mm-hmm. Well, they're kind of out of doors. Mm-hmm. It's not like a hothouse tomato.
Yeah, hothouse is different. A tunnel lets in air from the sides, and I think that helps.
And he's grown some heirloom varieties this year that were quite delicious so far.
Very good. Very good. Yes, people. It's nice to see people carrying tomatoes around. It's one of the joys of summer, like sweet corn.
Yes, and pretty soon it will be BLT time.
Oh, good.
Oh, good. Oh, boy. Bacon, lettuce, and tomato. Now, that's a classic that you don't want to mess with too much.
No, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. You're listening to KHOY. We'll listen to a little bit more music here. We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We were talking about picnic things and 4th of July. And earlier I read a poem by Lawrence Ferlinghetti about nationalism and patriotism and how we think of ourselves as a country. So remember, it took a revolution to start this country. And one of the points of contention at the time was the tea tax. So remember the Boston Tea Party? And I'm referring to the original Boston Tea Party. People were kind of mad about that. So let's consider tea.
Well, it is iced tea season.
Kristen Roach. Kristen Roach has started a new business actually 2 years ago now on Main Street.
Right, on Main Street.
Called?
Little Woods Tea Shop? Tea something? Little Woods Tea?
Littlewood's Tea and Herbs.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
It's a very pleasant place to go in and have a cup of tea of all sorts or buy herbs.
And she told me, well, I didn't, a new word. And you were talking about courgettes is a new, sort of a new word. Tisanes or tisanes, T-I-S-A-N-E.
That would be the French word, I think. Right.
Now, see, we think, we say tea, iced tea, you know, mint tea. We say all sorts of tea. But unless tea comes from a tea plant, a tea tree, a tea
most
bush.
Most of which are grown in Asia, parts of Asia.
Mm-hmm.
It's an evergreen, by the way.
Ah.
I know. Isn't that a funny thought?
Well, that's good. That means you can pick it quite a lot.
I mean, yes.
Again and again.
Yes. That works. And some of the grading of the tea comes from the variety, but also the time, you know, if it's picked, like the really expensive stuff is when it's just the very precious buds and the tips, and that makes it cost more.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's the usual rot gut that you get in the various, you know, brands that you find in the supermarket, and those are sold.
I don't think a label says rot gut tea, but
no.
But you know
it just
what we
says
mean.
Black tea.
You know what we mean. Yeah. You know what we mean.
Yeah, and then some of it is fermented in certain ways, and then, you know, green tea is treated. I think it's the same plant, but it's treated differently than black tea, and it's a very.
Green tea isn't roasted. Isn't black tea is a little bit somehow taken down the road, as in. With a little bit of heat, with a little bit of drying, with a little bit of something to kind of toast it a little bit, although maybe toasting isn't probably the right word.
Well, and whatever it does, it gives the black tea a higher caffeine content than the green tea.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, it does.
And all of these teas can be made into iced tea.
Yes.
As well as decaffeinated teas that are, well, there are teas that are decaffeinated, but there are also lots of other herbs that make wonderful blends that have medicinal qualities or no caffeine or urban berry qualities or floral qualities. I mean, you can just really go crazy with
that's
your teas.
That's where that word tisane or tisan comes
right,
in.
Right, because it's not literally a tea.
That means everything that we think of as tea, that's not tea. Well, herbs and rose hips and chamomile and all those things that are what we consider herb teas are really Tisanes, T-I-S-A-N-E-S. Yes.
And they're good to drink.
Yes. So, iced tea. Do we start with brewed tea? Or what's the difference between brewed tea and just setting it out in a jar, except for the convenience?
You know, I don't think they're... Well, for a while it was called sun tea. People are maybe sort of doing that. I think it's a... perhaps because the heat is not so intense, but the timing is longer, like on a sun tea, or even you can brew herbs that way, especially this time of year. I think it's, I like it as an extraction model.
Because it's an extraction model.
Well, because it's not quite as violent as, you know, when you pour the high temperature water over the leaf, you will knock out more of the volatile oils.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, because... volatile oils are volatile. So heat applied at higher temperatures and all at once is going to disturb the subtleties of the flavor more. So when you just put the tea leaves of any sort, even the herbal ones, in the water and start it kind of at room temperature and just leave it out in the sun for a few hours or however long it takes to get the color that you want, I think that more gentle brewing method is going to leave you a stronger flavor profile.
It doesn't seem to be as bitter, although I like good old-fashioned black tea that does have kind of a bitter flavor. That's good, too.
Yeah.
With a little ice and lemon, that's fine.
I think this is the same as like doing with a cold brew coffee.
Oh.
Like, for example, for my cold brew coffee, which I'm in cold brew coffee season right now, I just use my French press plunger pot and I, you know, fill it up with water at room temperature and then I put a good amount of coffee grounds on the top and I just set a plate over it and I let it sit at least 12 hours.
Oh, okay.
You know, making sure that when you start it, that the grounds are thoroughly wet.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, I'll do it in the night. And then when I get up in the morning, I just plunge it, and I've got my cold brew coffee.
You just leave it on the counter?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, just
I haven't made cold brew coffee in a long time. I should try that.
Yeah, this time of year, it's really nice. And, you know, of course, the good part of it is you get a slightly different flavor. A little more, I don't know, it leaves a more nutty flavor. I mean, I've been drinking this Peruvian coffee, and my usual method all winter long is to just use a little tiny espresso machine. And my flavor buds are so used to that when I change to the cold brew, I appreciate it even more. It is a little more delicate, and it has less acids in it.
Ah.
So it's gentler on your stomach.
See, it's been a long time since I'm in there. I must confess that I am a wake up with one eye still closed and stumble over to the Mr. Coffee and kind of just starter cooking there.
Good news about this method is you do it before you go to bed.
See?
And it's just as easy as the Mr. Coffee.
Very good. I should try.
I make like at least a quart at a time, which mm-hmm. I don't drink on all in one mm-hmm. day. So then it's just sitting in the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
So it's even easier the next day.
So you drink.
You
it.
Could do this, Lana.
I could.
You could.
So you drink it cold or you drink it warmed up?
You could do either one. Except if you're going to warm it up, don't boil it.
Okay.
Boiled coffee is. Not good.
Is icky. Yeah.
It's
yeah,
icky.
Yeah. I think that's cowboy coffee, isn't that? Would they?
Yeah, I don't know.
Heaven
in French,
knows
there's something like bouillou foutu means if you boil it, it's screwed, basically. Something like don't boil the coffee. But I use large amounts of milk in my coffee. I always do.
Mm-hmm.
And so drinking it cold with the cold milk is, especially this time of year, is no problem.
I do. I like cold coffee.
Yeah.
I don't
mind it at all.
Yeah. So, yeah, I should do that. Then I won't have to stumble around in the morning.
Well, yeah, and you don't need any fancy cold brew system to do this.
Ah, very good.
I mean, there might be some coffee purists who would disagree with me, but this one works fine for me.
Ah.
Yep.
And I like making sun tea, too. I do that. And
you make a lot of your own herbal mixtures, don't you, from the herbs you grow in the garden?
Using things from the garden. And this time of year, you just kind of go out. I've got my food dryer always kind of handy on the back porch there. So I dried a bunch of mint. We want to kind of grab things when they're at their best, which usually...
And that's for you. But, you know, the thing is, this time of year, you can just pick it and use it straight, like... You know, mint sun tea.
Yes.
Just take the mint from the garden, put it in the water, put a little cover so the mugs mm-hmm. don't get in it, and mm-hmm. bing, bang, bong, you've got mint tea.
I like to do herbs. Well, lemon balm is good. Or lemon mm-hmm. verbena is good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a lot of lemon balm popping up right now.
Yeah.
And in the spring, I do that with the motherwort. It makes a real quick, easy...
Nah. Motherwort's a good one, too.
In the spring, it's not... I usually pour, you know, close to boiling water over it. But there's so many things that make good teas. Even dandelion leaves make a nice, bitter, digestive...
Uh-huh. Very good. Oh, and tarragon. Tarragon is... You made a tarragon lemonade, right?
Yes.
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 But also, I've heard... Well, I've read this someplace or other. A tarragon... Tea, it's rather bitter, so you might want to add some other stuff to it. But it is another digestive sort of thing.
Your tarragon tea was bitter?
Tarragon tea? Just
uh-huh.
by itself, yeah.
Oh, well, how I made the lemonade was I took...
that's because I cooked. I mean, I put hot water on. Maybe I should have done that.
No, well, this is how I made the base for the lemonade, is I made a tarragon syrup.
Ah, very good.
So sugar and water, you bring it to the boiling point so that the sugar dissolves, just like any simple syrup,
mm-hmm.
only I tend to make my simple syrups not so syrupy because I don't like that much sugar. It gets too sweet. So I make the simple syrup base, and then I take it off the heat and just let it drop just a tad, certainly not boiling. And then I plunge the tarragon in, slap the lid on, and just let it sit till it all comes to room temperature. And then you just strain it off. And that becomes the base for the lemonade. You add more water, you add the lemon juice, just like you would make regular lemonade. And it's also, the tarragon syrup is a wonderful cocktail base, too.
Yes, and maybe it's a real summery taste sort of thing you just might want to take along on a picnic.
Yeah, tarragon just brings to mind Paris in the summer, and most of the year, as a matter of fact, they have all of the little grocery stores, because we're not talking, you know, like Hy-Vee's. They have still small grocery stores. And out in front, they have the chicken roasting case. It's an electronic thing, but it's a rotisserie. Mm-hmm. And they sit them outside because the smell is really seductive. So in the more autumnal and winter parts of the years, these rotating chicken rotisseries are stuffed with rosemary as the flavor. But in the summertime, they stuff them with tarragon.
Now, that would be
and
really
it's
good.
Really, it is delicious. And every few blocks, there's a store with the rotisserie tarragon chicken out front kind of seducing you. But you can do this at home, in the oven. Just stuff it under the skin, stuff it inside the bird. Even if you wanted to saute some chicken and chop the tarragon. Tarragon and chicken are really, really good.
It sounds
amazing. And then you add a little lemon, a little pepper. Oh, my, my.
It sounds very summery and very picnicky.
It is. Tarragon is very summery. That is French tarragon, as it were.
Yeah, we had a quite go around about French and Russian.
Yeah, there's Russian tarragon, Mexican tarragon, and French tarragon at the very least. Now, Russian tarragon that we found this spring in Des Moines, and we grew a bunch of it, does not taste like French tarragon. It's very herbaceous. It doesn't have that kind of fennelly, tangly thing to it. Even though it looks like French tarragon, it does a completely different thing. And then Mexican tarragon, which I don't see much here, but we had it a lot in Southern California, is it has the tarragon shape, but it's larger. But it also is more herbaceous like the Russian tarragon. So there's really nothing like the French tarragon, I think, is, for example, great in vinegar. You can make your own vinegar with French tarragon. You can that's the tarragon that is the preferred, I think.
So keep your ears and eyes out for that. Sounds like a good thing to do.
Very good in the summer.
Ha! We've been talking about picnics and mosquitoes and fireworks and
corn.
Oh, corn.
Oh, and Lana, you said you had a good watermelon finally.
I found a good watermelon at the food co-op. And it was seedless. How in the world do they do that? Oh, yes, good watermelons are here.
Okay,
yes,
so finally, because I've had some that have been rather insipid. It was just my impatience. It was probably too early.
Ah, well, we do have to wait. Good things always come, and it is summer. It is good. If you want to find out more about the Donna Lana Kitchen, go to khoifm.org, and you can find the Donna Lana Kitchen recipe page there. Thanks to Gio for keeping our recipe page and our web page up to date.
Yeah, and he's a good cook, too.
Yeah, we know such good people. Find out more about this radio station. Support this radio station. This is a good thing to do. And enjoy your 4th of July celebration. Enjoy those fireworks.
And lots of good food.
You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We had music today by Tim Jenkins. And we're going to go out with the Everly Brothers. Think of cruising those back roads with the windows down. Oh, yes. Happy summer. Yes.
Let's have the convertible with the top down while we're at it.
At least. Happy summer. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Colin Berzek. Eat good food and enjoy life.